Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
We are starting to hear about a BA.2 variant. That's, of course, coronavirus. That's COVID-19. How worried do we need to be? Professor Adrian Puren is the Chief Executive Officer at the National Institute for Communicable Diseases. And I hope you've noticed we've lost the acting, no longer acting Chief Executive Officer. Professor Adrian Puren, long overdue. Congratulations to you. How are you doing?
Thank you very much. Yes, this is the real thing, as they say.
That's it. Yes, you're no longer acting, hey? Now this is it.
No. This is it. I have to give you straight upfront, honest answers.
Yes, because
you used to try to do.
Right. I was just going to say what? Because you didn't used to do that in the past when you were only acting. Either way, how serious is this? Should we be concerned about this BA.2 variant?
I think at this point, I don't think we need to be. I know that it has been identified as a variant of interest, at least in the UK. And they have done some initial studies to show that this particular sublineage certainly appears to be dominant or is going to be dominant possibly in some regions, including South Africa. However, the implications of this are not really clear. There's some evidence to show that it's possibly more transmissible. But again, we're not sure what that would mean at this particular point.
If something is a variant of an existing or a change to an existing variant, does that mean that people that have had that particular variant are more protected? Does it impact them as well? How does this work?
Yeah, so I think that's an important question, because I think the point is, will people that have been exposed to the previous variant or sublineage now become reinfected? And I think those are the sort of questions I think that still need to be answered. It's possible that they will have a degree of protection, and we are hoping, if this is the case in terms of a highly or more transmissible sublineage, that in fact the more severe disease leading to hospitalizations and death will still mean that the T cell functions remain, and therefore you are still protected. So yes, we will have increase in circulating cases, but as we've had in this previous resurgence, that this is decoupling of numbers of cases versus hospitalizations and severity of disease.
Isn't this pretty much what we expected as we start to move into an endemic phase? Flu has a different variant almost every year. So surely this is something that we are likely to see happening.
Yes, but again, I think we just need to be cautious that this is, I know it's getting to our third year of this particular pandemic. And it's been unpredictable in many ways, as you've seen. So I think we just need to be cautious that this does not necessarily mean the road to the end of the road in terms of adaptation, but this is what it's going to be. So I think we just need to be cautious because we don't really know and can't predict, you know, what additional changes, what new variants may arise that may be very so different to what we were currently observing. You know, Delta's still lurking out there. At very small numbers, but it's still there. So again, I think we just need to be cautious that we don't become complacent and say, well, this is it. This is the virus we have to adapt to. Yes, it's done. So I think because it's not so unpredictable. There's so many possibilities.
Right. Yeah. Which is not a great lead up to my next question, because I wanted to ask when we can expect to change regulations. There's been a lot of talk about quarantine. We've been talking about this since the beginning of December, when we took one step forward and two steps back. And then, of course, the questions of people wearing masks, particularly outdoors, which is simply not happening anymore. Our regulations don't seem to be keeping up with the reality on the ground. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't want to comment specifically about that, but I think you're right that, in fact, if there is a complacency around that, I think that we'd still need to, for now at least, while decisions are being made and discussed, whether or how to ensure that we still keep safe. In other words, I know that we've had this uncoupling, but that still means people are still going into hospital. They are still dying. So I think it's really critical that we do keep up with those particular messages while we are here, and obviously be as practical as possible. So I think the mask wearing, the social distancing, the outdoors is indoors, and if indoors, make sure ventilation is in place, I think still needs to be upheld. in order for us to protect those individuals that are vulnerable, in particular the older age groups and those with comorbidities. And of course, vaccination. I think that's still very
important. Of course,
important.
That's the key
that's going to be the key, absolutely, to many of these events in order for us to build up the high levels of immunity that are required.
So are you saying that the mask wearing outside at this stage is unlikely to change?
I'm not saying that it may not change. And I think even there, I think you need to be cautious and assess your risk. Because if you're in a large crowd outside.
Right, yes. I'm obviously not speaking about, being at a concert where people are on top of each other. But if you are sitting at a place where you are outdoors and there's, of course, ventilation because you're outdoors and you're chatting to your friends, do you need to, who are sitting, just across whatever from you, do we still need to be wearing masks? I know legally.
Legally we do, but I think there must be some consideration again around what it is that we're trying to do that will not cause confusion, as well. Because I think if we try and develop multiple algorithms, people are just really not going to be adherent and that's going to lead to particular problems. So I know, for example, in the UK, I'm not sure that may have changed now. I think you were expected at least. In certain circumstances, like on transport systems, to actually wear your mask. So those need to be clear. So I think we just need to be clear, what it is when you're outside that you can do under what circumstances
Right. A concern that I have around this is if you tell people they have to wear masks under all circumstances and it doesn't feel logical or rational for that we need to wear them, for example, outside, then people are throwing, that you're teaching people to become non-law abiding or adherent to the laws. Whereas if people know that indoors you wear masks, outdoors you don't, then there's a measure and people can say to others, please keep your mask on, you're indoors. Whereas now there's this, And it's an observation that I've made, for example, over this weekend, where I really do see very, very few people adhering to mask wearing. It's happening anyway. But whereas if we had a rule that made sense as we move hopefully into the next phase, even if it's cautiously, I think we'd have more adherence to it. I'm not sure if I'm right. You've got experience here.
Yeah, I understand those because I think we have the knowledge and the information as well as individuals, and I think we can assess. I think that's important, is that as individuals we assess our risks as well. So even though the masks outdoors you don't have to, but still consider risk. And I think those are the key things that you need to take. And I think we are self-regulatory in some ways in order to manage. Whether or not we are going to be infected.
And in terms of quarantine timing?
As well, I think that those sort of things, I think will eventually change because of the practical nature of trying to ensure quarantine, given the difficulties around that. There may be ways in which, again, I'm not sure how accessible some of these tests are going to be and self-tests will be as well. That could certainly contribute to managing both quarantine and isolation. Which will make things, I think, a bit easier and more practical for us to manage our lives.
And that's really hopefully the stage that we'll be moving into, that we can manage our lives, remain safe, and protect those who are vulnerable. And then, of course, as Professor Adrian Puren said, the most important thing out of all of this, or maybe not the most important, but certainly of critical importance, is getting people vaccinated. Professor, final question before I let you go. The blending of vaccines, I know that that's been on the cards for a while. If you've had a Johnson, for example, having a choice to get the Pfizer as an alternative, is that something coming soon?
Again, I don't have the information on that. I think that there have been many, I'm sure, submissions from various organizations to have that heterologous.
Yes, that's the word. Right. Yes.
This is our current homologous vaccination. I'm sure that there are going to be considerations around that. I guess it's just some of it maybe around the logistics and the practicalities of it, but I'm sure that some of that will certainly come about, given that the science certainly demonstrates that as well. That's not to say that we should just abandon the Johnson & Johnson, but there may well be advantages to that particular vaccine, but I think we just need to see how this all pans out. Yes, thank you.
Professor Adrian Puren. Thank you as always, and again, congratulations from all of us for the well-deserved position. It is 7:30. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.